reached the champions, and that was special.
Good evening and welcome to episode 42 of the By the Minute AFC podcast. I'm Martin Clunis. I'm joined this week by, well, regular guest Richard Hay. How are you doing, Richard?
Ah, good, Martin. The sun's out. It's always better when the sun's out.
Definitely. And we have this week, our guest is JJ from Fitba That Ba. How are you doing, JJ?
Hi, I'm good, thanks. Yeah. There's no sun here. It's gone away. It's hidden.
We'll try and brighten up your evening then with this podcast. We'll see what we can do. So we're going to move right along. First, we're going to talk about yesterday's match. We played Celtic at the weekend. Unfortunately, we lost 3-2. What that has meant is that Aberdeen will now, unfortunately, only finish second in the league this season. We're not going to win the league, I'm afraid to say. Now, Richard, no, we spoke last week about the starting 11 possibly being different, but it was the same 11. Simon Church obviously wasn't as badly injured as we thought, or perhaps maybe Derek had just said to him, can you give me 45 minutes? What's your thoughts on that one?
I mean, he was obviously carrying a little bit of a twinge because he felt it during the game and came off after 43 minutes. It's just clearly the lack of other options that we have up front right now that meant that he needed to be pressed into service, which I'm sure personally he wasn't that keen about, knowing that he's got a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity at the European Championships in about a month's time. Obviously, as soon as he felt the slightest twinge, he was going to be asking to be taken off. 2-0 down, you don't necessarily want to see a defender coming on for a striker, but you could understand the reasoning behind that change to bring Mark Reynolds on, move Graham Shinney up into midfield. I mean, unusually, Graham Shinney had probably been at fault for both of the first two Celtic goals. To take him out of the line of fire and be a bit more defensive at the back probably wasn't a bad move, all things considered. But up to that point, Simon Church's advent had absolutely zero impact on the game anyway. And the change in formation with Kenny McLean pushed up top didn't seem to hinder us that much. In fact, we did create more in the second half.
Now, JJ, we had an early chance in the game as well that we missed. It seemed to have a touch of inevitability about it. Cliche time, you know, you're down at Celtic Park, you know fine they're going to probably dominate possession. No, that early opportunity, you're really looking at us to take that, aren't you?
It's typical when you're at Celtic Park, isn't it? You know what you're going to say? You can score it and miss it, it's fine margins. You shouldn't have gone down to two so early. But it shows the difference in the two teams, actually, is having that Patrick Roberts, like one of the most highly rated English players, massive transfer fee. He'll be on huge wages even on loan there, and he just manages to jinx his way in to score the two. You don't take your chances, you're not going to win. That's a cliche. But what else are we going to do? We don't have the same budget, we don't have the same players. There's not much to work with. We're 12 points off Celtic. Like Arsenal are 12 points off Leicester. It's not... I don't think it's a disaster. I think it's good.
We can point the finger at Graham Shinney for the two goals, perhaps, or maybe Will Flood for not closing down the first. But you know, credit to Roberts for the finish.
That's Constein's fault. I would say he didn't read the play Shinney was covering. Constein had to get back into position. That's the thing. Like, Constein's better going forward. He's really good when he's in left back because he can offer. He's so good in the air. So when we go forward, you know, when you overload in the right cross in, Constein's there. He gets quite a few goals that way. Shinney doesn't play left back like maybe he should. But Constein didn't read that play at all, and it's probably his fault. He's just not as good positionally as a lot of other players.
To give credit to Roberts, I mean, the first goal's a good enough strike, the second goal's a lovely finish. And it's that maybe that touch of quality that has genuinely been the difference between Roberts and Griffiths as well, who's put away some very tidy finishes this year. And as much as Adam Rooney has been very predatory within the six-yard box, we haven't had really that clinical ability to finish consistently from further out, and that's for something that Celtic have been able to translate 1 point into 3 points or a defeat into a draw. That's what a budget six times bigger than us will get you.
Yeah, they've got better players. I mean, they've got a bigger squad, better players. I mean, our best player on the day was Effie Ambrose. We're always going to be behind them. I can't see, if we hadn't lost all those games back in the, when we had that run where everything went wrong, I mean, it's 12 points, it's three games. It's us not losing stupid points away at certain places. It's Celtic giving up a couple more. If they hadn't signed Roberts in January, they wouldn't have scored that opening goal. It's annoying.
Well, the real frustration is, JJ, I think that we've matched them on the head-to-heads. You know, we've split the points six each. And, yeah, we have, as you've noted, thrown away some daft points to teams that we should not be dropping points to, with all due respect. We can maybe, you know, drop points in one game a season to Inverness or St Johnstone, whereas didn't win a single game in the three we played against Inverness. That really sums up our season, I think, more than our efforts against Celtic.
I find it weird talking about like this with Aberdeen, because I'm so used to us being utterly shite, just dreadful to watch. And now that we're finishing second and legitimately pushing for it, just fallen short this season. Next season's going to be much better, because you're going to have Rangers back there. They're going to teams will take points off Celtic. It could be a totally different thing. I think you're working on it. He needs to add some players. We should have maybe added something in January, but you don't know how it's going to affect the group and the mentality, because that's what's driving it. I think next season's going to be good. It's only 12 points. Like, it's so close to taking that chance. I'm more disappointed about the cups than the league.
That was something I was actually going to touch upon later, JJ. I mean, I'm a slightly older generation. Martin is as well. Martin may have missed a real glory period, but you know, when he was first going to the games, we were still up there challenging. Whereas I presume you, when you were growing up, we were utterly, utterly dire.
I'm 30. I used to go and Scofdale was in charge.
Yeah.
So there you go.
How difficult is it to make that connection with a team that's been? Is it dire? Is it just it's your team win or lose? Or, you know, how did it feel as a kid to be dragged along at Pittodrie when they were getting hammered week in, week out?
I arrogantly helped me understand football a bit better, because you can sort of see what's going wrong all of the time. and you can kind of go from there. It just makes you appreciate it a lot more. When you do win, it's worth so much more. Like, I remember seeing Darren Mackey score a goal from 30 yards out, and it was the best thing I'd ever seen, you know, not winning a cup or winning a league. And I think a lot of fans forget that just because you won something 30 years ago doesn't mean you should win after that. You can form... I mean, Hearts were really good this season. They should have done better than they've done. You could argue that next year they're going to be really strong as well. It's not a disconnect between what people have seen, like, you know, all the glory in the 80s and even the early 90s when we're challenging for the league. It's just all changed in the 90s. It's a different sport almost, Scottish football. The Old Firm got too much money, they won at exactly the right time, got all the money in, they got worldwide fame, so they've got loads of money coming in from everywhere, they can't fail to bring in revenue. And I just enjoy that I can watch Aberdeen and know that we probably will win rather than expecting to lose.
But we
can take Celtic going.
I think you and Martin would get on very well. He's normally the optimistic one of this podcast, but you know
he's
been outdone tonight.
I really have, yeah. So a few more things we'll talk about in Sunday's game. Half time, it was things were looking pretty depressing. They come back out, we concede another fairly preventable goal, I think, and it's pretty much at that point, Richard. It's almost switch off the TV time, isn't it?
Yeah, it was very close to that. I've got to say, I mean, you know, I was joking on the Twitter feed about Aradavise being on the red button or doing a minute-by-minute of Bargain Hunt instead, but I'm glad I stuck with it because they showed a little bit of heart, created a good few chances as well as the two goals. Hammering at Parkhead and to finish 15-20 points behind this season wouldn't really be a proper reflection on how the season has gone, because we have pushed them. We have pushed them pretty hard, and they have been worried. They have known that we were there, to use Derek McInnes's phraseology. So I think there's been a lot of talk about the mental side, about a so-called bottle, but I think it really does come down to quality of player, and in our case, quality of defender predominantly is a difference, to be perfectly honest, plus that little bit more clinicism up front. Frustrating, obviously, to lose, but it was looking like it for a stage it might be, 4-5, 6-0, back to the bad old days.
I've read people say that they thought that Celtic took the foot off the gas, and I don't really think that's true. I mean, JJ, you mentioned it earlier on. I mean, the masterstroke substitution for Aberdeen was, of course, Effie Ambrose coming onto the pitch. I all know how bad he is. And we have Hayes and we have McGinn, who know exactly how to play against someone like that and just pull him wide, getting behind him. And we actually kind of came back into the game, and I thought we were well deserving of at least the two goals.
I think a lot of the problem is that we're very predictable. We don't have a lot of players play a different plan. McInnes is quite rigid with the way he sets us out. So Celtic can easily set out how to beat us or hold us back. You've got those two boys out wide. If you stop them getting service, stop the ball getting to them, they can't do anything. And as soon as Ambrose came on, he's hopeless. I don't know how he's at Celtic. Yeah, that totally changed the game. It's a change of momentum, isn't it? Once you get it going, it's mentality. You're right about maybe the bottle or something like that. There's something in the players, you change the atmosphere around it so we do win. I don't know if you remember if you were at the cup final when we won that. It's something so inevitable that we'd go 0-0 all the way to penalties. And I just thought, when it went to penalties, that's it. We're not going to win this because we, you know, we always bottle it at the last part and hope that would be the turning point. This season, all those wins in a row, that should have been where momentum kept going and going and going. Whatever happened off the ball that, you know, changed that. Lots of rumours going around as to why that was. But that just threw us off. And then that Celtic game, you can sort of see the same thing. You go 1-0 down, 2-0 down, and suddenly the game plan's gone. You're sort of ruined. All hope's gone. Turn the TV off. They turn their brains off. And then Effie Ambrose comes on, which changes everything.
It was very easy for them going forward yesterday. That's what I would say. Throughout the whole 90 minutes, it was very easy for them. Whereas it took us quite a long time to find our way going forward again after we lost the first goal. We had a very good chance before they scored, but from that point in the first half, we barely got on the front foot again. But when we did, for the majority of the second half, I think, you know, we had the better of it. But of course, they'd built up the cushion by that point, so it's very difficult to tell. But I'm sure they would have been very keen, and the home fans would have been very keen to give us that sort of hammering, to demonstrate the gulf that they believe exists. But as I said, I think that would have been an unfair gloss on the gap between the two sides.
Yeah, there's a gap between us, clearly, because of what's happened in the past. But I'm not sure the fans, were they that fussed with trying to prove the distance between Aberdeen and Celtic? They just think they are. There's something more together at Aberdeen. It's better organised. Celtic have better players. We really missed a chance this season to take them on. I think next season is where it's at. I think if we don't do something next season, you need to rip up the team and do something else with it. Don't know what you boys think of that.
Well, I think we've got most of the side obviously contracted for next year anyway. And I think we've spoken maybe before on this podcast about whether it's going to be evolution next season or revolution next year. I think we touched on the Alex Ferguson thing where he says that 3 years tends to be the maximum length of time that a side stays together. And we're reaching that point now for, obviously, Derek McInnes has been in charge for 3 seasons. So there's a school of thought that says, I mean, certainly I think parts of the side need major work. I think with defenders, I think we need 2 new centre-halves, or at least 1 new centre-half that can go back and get the best out of Mark Reynolds again. So I think there's elements of the side that do need a bit of major surgery, but everything else, you know, the 2 fullbacks are probably amongst the best in the league. Clearly, we've got to get the keeper situation sorted. Up front, Johnny Hayes and Armageddon, again, 2 of the better players in the league. Adam Rooney, hard to find fault with him. So, yeah, we're not a million miles away, but there's factors that we're never going to be able to bridge, such as squad depth, such, you know, if we lose Adam Rooney for a period, we're very, very light up front. And you can try and bridge that, but ultimately it becomes just a step too far.
I did think it was a pretty valid comment that they made on Sky after the game yesterday as well, where they spoke about Rooney being injured. They put it to whoever was in the studio, McCann, whoever it was, I think it was Sean Maloney, that if the shoe was on the other foot and say Lee Griffiths was out of that Celtic team for the length of time that Adam Rooney's been missing, I think it would be a lot closer. And there may actually be it might have been a different thing. I know you can only say, you know, if, but, and maybe, but it's, I think it was a pretty good point actually that, you know, Lee Griffiths has won them that league himself this season.
I mean, Griffiths has been very, very good. He's scored, what, nearly 40 goals, and he's probably single-handedly, if you look at the difference that his goals have made, won a lot of points for Celtic. But I think you could put pretty much anybody up front for Celtic in this league, and they'd probably score 15, 20 goals. Even if you put somebody like Nadia Chifty, or who was the other guy they signed in January, if you stuck him up front as lone striker for the whole season, he would ultimately get a minimum number of goals because they're going to create a lot of chances in these games. Absolutely, we miss Rooney. Simon Church has come in and done okay, but at this level, in this league, Adam Rooney is an excellent, excellent scorer of goals.
The biggest mistake made this season is losing Danny Ward. If he loses Danny Ward and then brings in another goalkeeper, he clearly doesn't rate Scott Brown, and as well as Brown did when he kept that clean sheet record, he's not good enough. And he doesn't give any inspiration to defenders. They look nervous in front of him. Everything's there. He played Colin against Celtic, didn't he? He was in goal.
Yeah.
And if he'd had someone there, that's got to be the key thing, the keeper. You're only as good as your goalkeeper. It's like a band's only as good as the drummer. You've got to have someone at the back who inspires confidence in the team and you can drive from there. I don't think we're missing too much. I think the midfield needs a lot of ask. I've not seen a lot of Ryan Jack this season. I don't think he's been quite the same this year. You need someone to replace Willow Flood in the middle and break up the midfield. There's no one there taking charge of that midfield and really stopping things getting to the defence. You said that you need two new centre-backs. I don't know, I think Reynolds and Taylor's fairly decent. McInnes has at times tried three at the back. I don't really, must have tried it in training and it works or something like that. I can see the thoughts behind it, getting Shinny and Logan further up the pitch. But the problem for me is in midfield and having replacements for Hayes. When Hayes is not there, it's a different team. Like, he is by far and away the best player we've got. Probably one of the best players I've ever seen at Pataudry, actually, Johnny Hayes.
We saw after the match as well that Derek McInnes is quite rightly unhappy with the criticism that some of the team have had. Now, of course, he's going to come out and protect his players, but he's right to point out the gaps between Aberdeen and Celtic, which we mentioned earlier on about the financial thing. Derek's also mentioned that Rangers are going to be coming into the league for the first time. They're going to need to spend millions of pounds. That seems to be, it's okay for them to spend millions of pounds, but why aren't Aberdeen competing? And I can understand why he gets upset with that, because we don't have millions of pounds to spend. No, we very rarely spend a transfer fee. But we are going to have to strengthen in the summer, Richard, and I think that's something that we're all aware of.
Nobody really knows what the quality of the promoted side is really going to be. I mean, they managed to beat Celtic in a one-off game, but spent the season playing against sides like Livingston and Dumbarton, and spent the last few weeks, in fact, losing to those sides. So we talk about us having a thin squad. They've got a very threadbare squad as it stands. Like, the midfield at the moment is a Hearts reject and a Bradford City reject. So, you know, we're not talking about top-notch players that are coming into the league. Again, I think the name itself is going to be enough to win a lot of points against a lot of sides who'll go to Glasgow and not approach it in the same way that they would approach coming to Pataudry. You know, a lot of sides will think they can come to Pataudry and take something, but they'll automatically have a defeatist attitude when they go to Glasgow. Hearts as well. Hearts have been very good this season. Very, very tough to beat. Again, I don't automatically assume that they're going to continue on an upward trajectory. It's hard to see. Again, they might hit a ceiling. How they react to not having that continued level of success and continued number of wins, it's difficult, isn't it? I mean, you do kind of feel that most of the teams in this league are only a couple of bad results from spiralling off into a sort of Dundee United situation.
Yeah. JJ, one thing as well is that, you know, everybody seems to think that Celtic are going to improve next season. But they're going to be bringing in a new man who's going to want his own players in there as well. There's quite a few players out of contract. There's some of the more senior ones like Charlie Mulgrew are out of contract. So that surely plays in Aberdeen's hands for next season, doesn't it?
I don't think the transfer fees are really a thing that Aberdeen should worry about. There'll be so many free transfers going around that you can try and get in. It's getting the right ones, not accepting the balance of the squad. It depends who Celtic get in. I mean, they're like, it's mental. They're linked with people like Brendan Rodgers, David Moyes. I mean, you can see them coming in and you expect them to just walk the league because they just have so much of a know-how about it. We can't compete with them in the transfer market. The loan market, if you look at Rangers getting that boy Zalalem from Arsenal, I mean, he must be in a tidy wage as well. Not even played that much for them. You're right with the name. They'll be able to attract a lot of players next season. Rangers probably will play into their hands that people are going to Ibrox and know that they're playing against Rangers like that, won't it? It depends what McInnes' scouting network's like. I mean, half the problem is that budget, isn't it? It's not to do with buying the players, it's having the money to afford the staff to do it.
Yeah, but again, I don't think we can discount the possibility of Celtic appointing a Tony Mowbray or a John Barnes. I mean, there's no guarantee of success with a new manager. Daly has taken a fair bit of criticism, but he's done the minimum what was expected of him, which was obviously to win the leagues. Again, the assumption that Celtic will automatically be better or that Celtic will spend their wage budget or transfer budget sensibly isn't necessarily an automatic given either. I mean, they spent £4 million on Stefan Skepovic and Nadia Chifty combined, and they're currently on loan at different clubs right now. It's not hard to see a situation where they go out and make the same mistakes again, to be perfectly honest. But, I mean, it's what the majority of the media in this country want. They want back to the old kind of old firm arms race between the two. Each of them spending money they can't really afford on pretty mediocre players and being miles ahead of the competition. But I don't think we're going to see that, nor do I quite think we're going to be back to a situation like we were in the mid-80s where there was a genuinely competitive league for a period of about 5 years. I think Celtic are going to still be quite a bit ahead of the pack. But as I say, you can't discount the fact that they're going to have a change in manager and that a potential to go wrong, absolutely.
Now, of course, we have two upcoming games this week as well, which we're going to cover in a minute, but we're going to have a conversation with our guest now. It's JJ, we're going to have a wee chat with you, one of the masterminds behind the Fit By That Ba site. You mentioned earlier on that early seasons going to Pataudry were under Skovdal, which Yeah, that sounded like a lot of fun. What's your earliest memory of following the Dons anyway? We want to check your Dons credentials first, really.
The Dons credentials, fine. My first ever football game, I went to see Aberdeen play Rangers Reserves. I remember some boy, it was my earliest football memories, but some boy, Rangers guy, the ball went out for a throw and he went to pick it up and he was told it was an Aberdeen throw and he chucked the ball to the ground in disgust and was booked. And there was just all these kids at the front of the, I was one of them, just like going, it was a, there we go, that. And then after that, another memory I have, I mean, it was really poor football, do you know. We went about 20 million games in a row without scoring, and then Andy Dow got a free kick about 25 yards into the bottom corner, as high as I've ever jumped. It was amazing. Yeah, that's the earliest is that, because I mean, I started going to the football in about 97. I had a season ticket, I think. Does that make sense?
Yeah. You caught the good what you would refer to as the good old days then, 97.
Oh yeah, I mean I was there in that amazing season that we didn't get relegated because Falkirk Stadium was too small.
You obviously, we want to talk about the Fit by That Bar stuff or some really pretty funny stuff on there. I mean, what's the background behind the website? What, I mean, what did the idea for this come from? Is it just you and a couple of mates or?
No, I was living in Glasgow at the time and I was really bored because working in retail, I hated it, and I've always wanted to write. So I just thought I'd start a website, and Jack's one of my good friends from home, and Jack Waterson's the other guy who does this. And so I just sort of set up a website, did some artwork for it, set up the style, and we just started writing. And after after a while, I started making these YouTube videos, and I got lucky with a couple of them that just went absolutely massive, and interest really picked up from there. And I started getting lots of emails and things and phone calls from nice people in the media. And then after about a year, I think Jack kind of got too busy with work and he kind of stopped writing. But I've been doing the YouTube for about 3-4 years now or something like that, and the website, mostly myself. Jack did some writing now and again over a while. It's very funny when he does write, but he's either too lazy or too busy. And I can never tell which. So I always wanted to do it as a full-time job, but I managed to do it. I worked in TV for a while as a writer, and now I'm at the Telegraph. As an actual real journalist, would you believe?
A real journalist, yeah. We posted a link earlier on of you on CNN, an actual proper channel.
It's a real one, yeah.
Yeah, not just some 2-bit Aberdeen podcast.
Oh, don't put yourself down. When you go on those things, right, so it's absolutely fine. You're always thinking, oh, this is fine. I know what I'm talking about. I've done my research. You know, sort of like I did for today when I watched the highlights of the Celtic game. And so I was sitting in the... On Skype, I was doing it with him on this thing, and you're just waiting to go on there. And suddenly they patch you through, and they say, "Okay, JJ, you're going to be on with George in 3, 2, 1. Hello, welcome to CNN. It's JJ." And then your brain starts screaming, and you don't know what you're supposed to say. And you know when you start talking, and you know you're dancing around the point without ever actually making the point.
All the time, yeah.
Yeah, so that's what I tend to do in those things. So and then halfway through you realise you're doing it and you've forgotten what the point is.
You do quite a lot of songs on the site as well. We'll cover the two most famous Aberdeen ones in a minute anyway. But I mean, are you guys frustrated musicians? I mean, is there a serious side to the music that you know you maybe we don't know about?
I mean, it's all me. I tried to be a real musician. But see, I always find this with comedy songs, right? If you're a comedian who does songs, you're either not funny enough to be a comedian, or you're not a good enough musician to be a musician. Yet here I am doing comedy songs about football, even worse. It's a we did the only songs you can ask about, the Rooney one and the standard Cup Final song.
Yeah.
The one. Yeah, Jack helped write the lyrics for the Cup Final song. But I just record them all in my room. I used to do quite a lot of them because I was really bored and I just thought it'd be funny. I just find silly things like that funny. But after a while, I don't know, it seemed like everyone was doing these things. I don't like doing the same as everyone else, so I've kind of stopped doing it so I'm not oversaturating the market. Like when we started Fit by That Bar, there wasn't any of this like Mirror Rose Ed stuff. Do you know, like silly, like, oh my God, this happened. Here's a video. Lol, 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 lads. Like now that's all it is. All these different websites doing it. And
Paddy Power and I think it's Joe do a lot of them as well. They're all just kind of the same now.
Yeah, and like we were before Paddy Power had that whole like thing as well, and then sounding such a jerk. And like, I'm so first. But I feel like they sort of were. And I mean, Mirror definitely changed its tone. I'm not saying the whole Mirror changed its tone. I'm not an inspiring newspaper. I was doing something that a lot of other people were doing at the same time, it turns out, and that became kind of normal. Now, a lot of online, not journalism, but a lot of football coverage is written in that sort of style now.
Yeah.
Like, I always just put that by as a voice, as a character, so I could just sort of say whatever I wanted to. And then I found it really difficult to keep slagging off people when I was working alongside them. Like, a lot of the time, one of Jack's favourite, well, he liked to describe Harry Redknapp as looking like he was melted. But I used to like see him all the time in the TV station I used to work at. It kind of puts you off doing it.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite interesting you say that, though, JJ, about the change in tone at mainstream media, because I guess when the first sort of bunch of stuff you did on the Telegraph site was really of that vein, is that fair to say?
Oh, yeah, like that's how I got it. It's the back of how I did Fibberlapa.
Yeah.
Finding viral content and delivering it to your audience. But I was okay at that. I did well enough to get a job out of it. There's just so too much of it now. Have you ever read The Metro before?
We've had that misfortune, yeah.
Yeah. I think they should sell it in the fiction section, not sports section. I don't know. Some of it is just unreadable. And it's all like, oh, lol, you won't believe what's happened next. And we were trying to do that. I mean, that's the sort of thing that we were doing first at Telegraph when I started there. But we're trying to do it in a readable way and try and give it some sort of nice writing and try and spend our time not just doing. It's generally just, here's a video. Here's a line describing the video. Here are some words I've mashed onto the keyboard. Here's a sign-off. And that's every single article. But it seems to... I think it got oversaturated and it stopped now. I don't see those things anymore. The Lad Bible sort of killed them.
Yeah, pretty much any page that's got Bible in the name is sort of is on a hiding to nothing, really, isn't it?
I think we need to start making other religions so we can have like, the Lad Quran and stuff.
I am not touching anything involving that.
This is the holy book, isn't it? It's nice.
We'll get fatwas on us or something, I don't know.
They're not all bad.
Yeah. Yeah, better cut that bit out, Richard. You did a couple of songs based on, obviously, Aberdeen Football Club as well. The first one you did was the Adam Rooney and the Ghost of Harold Stavrum. I have to ask, you did get some feedback from Adam Rooney about that, didn't you?
Yeah, I think he liked it, which was nice. I can't remember now. I think I just sent it to him a few times, and then I think Johnny Hayes and a couple of others they found it as well, found it quite funny. There was someone who got back to me and said that he showed his wife the video and she went, "Did Arden Rooney used to sell melons?" There's a bit in the video where he sells melons.
Yeah.
I particularly enjoyed your woman's voice there, JJ.
That's in my normal voice, this is my put on one.
Alright.
I talk normally, it's actually more like this, but I put on the Aberdeen accent to get on shows like this one.
And you did, of course, they did the cup final song as well. Now, the art of the cup final song was long dead, and especially for Aberdeen, who hadn't been in a cup final in years anyway. But you guys, well, you tried to resurrect it, and it kind of worked, didn't it?
Oh, and how! It was amazing, Matt. It was so much fun. I've got on my wall in my house. The P&J did their front page was what you call it, screen grabs from the video.
Yeah.
Didn't ask permission, but you know, it's like, yeah, it was amazing fun. I just like cup final videos like that. It was really good, and it seemed to do really well. Those things can go either way. I was really close to getting Alex Ferguson on that video.
Really?
Yeah, and Alex McLeish as well. Yeah, they said he would do it. Ferguson's, I had to go through his agent, and I just gave up. I didn't think it would really work. Alex McLeish was really close to it. We nearly got Willie Miller, but he didn't do it either. He wanted McLeish to do it first. or something like that. Those are true stories.
Yeah, the Ferguson one's an interesting one, because even Michael Grant, for example, did a book about the Fergie years, and he tried to get an interview with Alex Ferguson, and he was like, nope, don't do it unless it's an official club publication. Did you lie to Fergie and say it was an official Aberdeen Cup final song? Is that what you...
No, I used to work in a bar in the same place that his best friend's from, so I phoned his best pal. I got his number up to the guy in the bar, I was like... Aye, aye, it's JJ from the pub. And he phoned him up and he says, Oh, yeah, I've spoken to Alex, but you need him to go through his agent, like. So, you about it. I probably shouldn't reveal how I got Alex McLeish's number, but it's in a way that I probably could have got fired from my other job. And I phoned him up, and he's just like, oh, it's good. He sent me an email saying it was good fun, he enjoyed it.
Because I was going to say, you had a laundry list of, you know, famous Dons fans in there as well. You know, Mackey, obviously, the holy Ian Jess, you know, King Joey.
That's all I wanted. I wanted Darren Mackey and Ian Jess. I was sort of done with that, but we kept getting them in. David Priest meant to do him, he never did.
So, I mean, obviously, we're finding the same thing as you. Are you just kind of cold calling these people and saying... Because, I mean, that's how we get our guests on our podcast. We just pester them and they kind of... Eventually, they say yes.
Sometimes.
It depends if I know where they live or not. I'm quite lucky in like the job I've got that I managed to, I'm able to get some phone numbers. I've got Tori Andre Flo's number on my phone. That's a good one. He's cold calling, don't you? I mean, that's what you do in those sorts of jobs. You got to phone people up and try and get them to do things. One of the most fun things, or not fun, was that I tried to, on the show I worked with, I tried to organise this thing with all the football mascots. I don't know where I'm going with this tangent. But you just have to phone all the football mascots to try and organise their things. They're really odd people. Just phone them up and say, hi, I'm trying to book you to play chess against another mascot or to run down a hill or something like that. No one's up for it. Same with the footballers, you just get a hold of them. You're meant to go through agents because they don't want to be bothered by Aberdeen fans.
I think the thing with the cup final song you did as well is that it was kind of fun as well. I mean, I know the Inverness guys, I think it's Toby Michaels his name is or something, he did one, but it was kind of serious.
What a song that is.
He's one of these kind of rock and roller guys, but it was a bit too serious. Whereas, I mean, did you deliberately go down the route of kind of making it a bit tongue in cheek, or?
All the songs have like, it's like the European song. I want it to be like that. You know, have that the verse chorus, a little bit we can sing along. I changed the words and a few of the bits because some people wouldn't take part in their original state. And you can't make it too serious, can you? I love that ICT one because it's. I can't tell if he was totally serious with it or not, because it's like Tenacious D. It's so over the top. I bought it. I think it's amazing.
I've met Toby a couple of times. I'm pretty sure it was serious.
Really?
Definitely. Yeah. I have actually met him a couple of times.
So much better.
Of course, because you did the other one. Your Adam Rooney one was more a power ballad, and this was the kind of the funnier one. So
yeah, that was deadly serious. Adam Rooney one.
So if you guys haven't checked out any of JJ's stuff, I urge you to go to the website fitbythatba.com or on Twitter it's at fitbythatba as well. We'll tweet out the links for the two AFC videos as well, so you can check them if you haven't seen them. But if you haven't, you really need to get around to seeing them. Now we're going to talk about the two upcoming games that Aberdeen have got. The final two games of the season, and then it's going to be all over for another year. This Thursday night we're playing Hearts at Pittodrie. Derek McInnes has said he wants to beat last year's points tally, so surely we're going to have possibly our strongest start in 11 out, Richard? Or is the points tally really that important? Is beating it really that important? Should we be using this time to get some younger players some game time?
Well, first off, no. Beating last year's points tally isn't really that important. In theory, yes, we should be trying to rest some of the guys given we start again in June the 30th. However, it is only an extra week that we're asking them to put in a shift for. And secondly, I really, really, really want to beat Hearts because they're horrible. So, as I say, I don't care about the points total, but I want to hammer Hearts. So hopefully we go with a very strong team on Thursday night and do just that.
Fair enough then. Okay, so is there any... I mean, obviously, I don't think Simon Church is going to be playing, so who do you want to see in and out of the side? I know, obviously, Joe Nuttall was on the bench on Sunday, but I think he was only there just to kind of fill up the numbers. How do you reckon we would line up then?
I think he'll go for the points tally. It shows progression and you've got it written down. I think it's actually quite important. I know it might not seem it, but I think it's really good to show progress on each season and you can see the how you're getting better because it's written down in history. So you can look back at how many points you're getting so you know what you need for the next season. It's quite economical. It's the same sort of way that I guess Arsene Wenger does it at Arsenal. He always points out how many goals you scored and how many goals you conceded. It'd be good to give a couple of young ones a little bit of game time. Maybe stick Story in midfield, give him a game. Because I don't know how much... I mean, you'll give Robson his last game, won't you? He won't be there after the season, he's hope. Yeah. I mean, he's nice. I do like you, Barry Robson. McKenna will go for it. He'll go for the to try and get the points. I don't think he'll mess around with treating them like an end of season friendly. It's really important getting that.
I mean, I'm just to clarify, I'm in the same camp as Richard. I really, really do want us to beat Hearts because I really don't like them. Having covered two of the games this season for the website, I really hate them. We'll hopefully have 3 points with that from them on Thursday night. Then it comes to Sunday, home to Ross County, final game of the season. Much like last year's St Johnstone game, I think this is probably going to end up being testimonial stuff, but without the distraction of us saying cheerio to Russell Anderson.
Maybe, I don't know. I think McInnes takes it very seriously and is a consummate professional. If he's nothing else, he's professional McInnes. And he will expect his players to have the mentality they treat every game as a game that they should be winning. And that's the kind of thing they need to have at the club if we're to go forward. If you don't treat every single game like it's important, even though it's not, what do you show? It just doesn't show a lack of drive. If the players in training aren't really going for it and trying to get in the team, they should be out of the team, and that's when the youngsters come in. It shouldn't just be a end of the season, in you go, boys, have a wee go. It should be a real moment of pride, and to get in that first team should be a massive, massive achievement. And perhaps the players aren't of the standard. McInnes thinks they're quite there yet. Maybe they haven't pushed for it just enough yet. I think he'll put the same team in he always puts out for both. And if the youngsters are nipping at him to get on, then he might give them half an hour, at the end of each. You'll definitely see Hayes and that get a game.
Yeah, I certainly think we will see some of the younger players. I mean, it's not going to be like, the old days where, the last game of the season was sort of filled out with people like Stephen Tarditi and guys like that who are just getting their only ever a Don's appearance.
And there's no need for it. If they're good enough to get in the team, they can get in the team whenever. I don't think McInnes is going to just give them a chance to go and play around now. Because it's not the same. It's not like they're not really getting a taste of actual first team football if they're doing that. It's in the same way that a lot of clubs will play youth teams or youth players in friendlies pre-season because they can see how they play with different mix of players. But it's different when it's competitive and it's in that zone. And teams should want to beat us now. They should want to come to Aberdeen trying to beat us because we are the biggest challengers to Celtic at the moment. It shouldn't be a case of, oh, season's done, Celtic's won again, oi.
Well, I think Thursday will definitely have an edge to it because Hearts will want to beat us without question. But Sunday might be the more sedate experience, shall we say. But it's a really strong point about players having to earn their place in that team. And I think that's when we've spoken about Cammy Smith earlier this season. It's probably something he's not done well enough on the training field. I think we have to come to that conclusion that he's not getting a look in. And especially with possibly Church and Rooney out on Thursday and Sunday. I mean, it's ready-made there for Cammy Smith to drop into that hole behind Kenny McLean playing up top, I would have thought. But again, if you're not doing it on the training field Monday to Friday, and I don't know if that is the reason, but looking at the selection over the past couple of months, you have to conclude that, then it would be wrong just to kind of give him that reward now simply because we're at the end of the season.
Absolutely, yeah. It's that's the wrong mentality. They have to come into it. Cammy Smith, I think he's a good player. He's much better than like Nicky Lowe. He's way above where he was. McLean up front, I don't know. That's probably a good opportunity to play one of the young strikers and let Smith play in the actual position he wants to play in. There's no point. Is Church definitely out of these two games, is he?
Not definitely, but I don't think there's going to be any risk taken. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But yeah, we've got Joe Nuttall. We can't play Lawrence Shankland, despite St Mirren's season being finished. Nuttall, I mean, he's been out injured for quite a while, only just come back into the reserve team. I don't expect him to start. He might get 15-20 minutes, but I think he's a long way off first team start.
The other option is you've got McGinn can play up front. You can even go for a revolutionary new strikerless formation like a lot of the teams are playing. You'd be like Germany and just have that front four always going around each other. And you've got McGinn, McLean, Hayes. They can all sort of swap position. It'd be quite interesting to see. You know, try some new tactical things out in Scottish football. That's a go.
Yeah, I think 4-6-0 is maybe never going to catch on in Scottish football after Craig Levein's first.
Not with that attitude.
It's like three in the back for Aberdeen. It's been tried so often that it's never worked. Never worked.
If there's a team to play 4-6-0 against, it is probably Craig Levein's Hearts. So we could go with it. Oh, I mean Robbie Nielsen's Hearts. Sorry.
I mean they won't. Obviously they'll play 4-2-3-1 like always.
Yes. And we have those two games. Both those games are going to be covered. We're going to have live minute-by-minute coverage over on the website. We'll tweet out the link so you can follow that there during the week. That brings us to an end of another Aberdeen FC By The Minute podcast. I want to thank JJ for coming on. Thanks for everyone. You've been a great guest.
Thanks. I think I've made not a lot of points that made any sense, but I did try, and that's the really important thing to remember.
That's it. Do or do not. There is no try. I want to thank our regular Richard Hayes as well. Thanks for coming on, Richard.
Yeah, thank you. It's been different.
It's been different. It's certainly been different this week. There's nothing really to play for anymore. We just have to have mess about now, I think.
It's amazing. These are happy days.
We're second. Exactly. We're the second best team in the country. And with that, we're going to leave you. I've been Martin Clunis, and we'll see you next week. Good night.